Okay, so let's just see. How many of them got, I don't even know that. Who has got any of the programs working this week? You're the only one to get anything working this week? Okay.
I got the cheat-through several days ago.
The cheat-through, you got approved.
Oh, yes.
So you got one approved, which was the cheating one.
Yeah, and I got the numbers from the cheat from my program.
So what you're saying, you want to say it's a half cheat.
But
fine. And anybody else get anything cheating or not cheating? So the problem was on the Carmichael numbers. You got it to work. It did all the, it was able to do that to find all the Carmichael numbers in about 2 seconds. Okay, and that took 2 seconds. How much time did yours take when you if you tried to have it work on all the numbers?
If I use the cheat, it takes 2.5 seconds.
No. What happens if you did not use a cheat?
If I did
not. How fast did you get it to go?
As compared to their test set?
Well, as a fast answer, I would have tried it on all possible integers, which, by the way, is what their test set is.
Okay,
so you were right at identifying that there are a large number of tests. In fact, the set of tests is all possible integers. Because I wanted to see whether they were doing something dirty about giving you the same answer over and over again. And that they're not doing.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not sure.
Okay.
That wasn't the one that I spent most of my time on. I spent most of my time on back devices.
And that one did not work or did not get close to?
As far as I know, it works fine. I timed up every time. And, I mean, I know the algorithm we talked about in class, and it, you know, and every time it gets over 10 seconds.
So you were doing, again, factorizers. Again, that one was trying to determine a number divided by n factorial.
Right.
And you don't know, what else did we know? I mean, did anybody else try to get it to work, the factorizers to work? You had time limit even when we were doing it by the prime factorization method. 2 days ago, but so you were doing factorize n factorial? Okay. I see. So wait, so what you did was a little bit different, I think. What I want to say was, you did I'm guessing what you did now, which is a little bit different than what we talked about, but would also might have worked, except you're telling me it doesn't, is if you computed, you wanted to find out, does A divide n factorial? And what you did was find, what was the greatest common divisor of A and, let's say, n? And then you divided that out, and once you divided that out, you now had, let's say that's equal to G. You then repeated the process with A equals A divided by G prime, right? And then repeated it with not N, but in general with I, okay? So that would work. You didn't talk about the greatest common divisor. It's in the book, okay. That would certainly work. Does everybody agree with that? Okay, that it's finding out how much of N is there in this thing. Okay, and kept going. What was the largest value of N that was allowed?
To the 31.
N was 2^31. Is that so?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's stop and think about that. That's something you're going to have to note. What catch with that, though, is, of course, that 2^31 is a very large number. Okay, and if you have been looped through 2^31 for each one of these things, you would be in trouble, right? Did we have to actually loop through all values of... It stops when A gets down to 1. So you're going to be telling me, first you're going to try and score values of A. So when A was smaller than this, that would work. The idea, what other cases might, are there fast cases that your program might have trouble with? Suppose, let's say that N is equal to 700, sort of a huge number. And A is also the same huge number. If A is less than N, the answer is yes regardless, right? Why is that? Because N factorial is going to include A as one of its products.
Yeah.
Right? So that might be a way to avoid some quick operations. I'm wondering if there's not, so the problem that we're right now having is suppose it's not. Okay? Suppose if this was 70 or a prime number, that A was some kind of large prime. Okay? And this was not. How would we have handled that? Okay?
Well, if A is larger than N, it can't be. And then we definitely know it's not in N factorial if A is prime.
If that's prime, when you did the prime factorization of A, did you do any tests relative to N to quickly decide whether you could or couldn't do it? Right now, in both cases, in the algorithm, we computed the prime factorization of it. Was there anything we might have done to speed that up? So we were looking to see how many times did this go in there, how many times did that go in there, right? That was what we were looking at. This algorithm should have been much faster than your GCD algorithm. Does everybody agree with that?
It seems really fast. I mean, it
doesn't. Your problem seems fast. I
don't see anything in there that should take much time at all. It seems like it would really move very quickly.
Well, what about the special case where there's a big mismatch where N is big and the GCD here is small? Not GCD, where A is going to have large prime factors. For your algorithm, that still should be fast, right?
I think so. It seems like it should be.
Because you're just going to count how many times this is in there, right?
Right.
Don't say I see it right now. Okay. There may or may not be some special cases that are interesting. But is it expensive to factor? How long does it take you to do the factoring? The largest possible integer.
It takes a little while, but I'm not sure how it could be optimized anymore, right? I mean, right now.
You only go up the square root of
A. Yeah, I only go up the square root of A. I'm only checking primes. I don't even, because of running out of time, I wasn't spending the time even generating the primes.
Okay, that's a little depressing. Maybe worth following up with my specials. Okay, I did check out that the previous, we know that the first one was solvable. Second one,
So the Carmichael algorithm you gave, basically, what would your argument be in the base case for it? Because my base case I had when n equals 1, I can just return A. Would you recommend changing?
Well, I don't think that for n equals 1, didn't see the details here, but I thought that, what was the case here? We'll take a quick look here, but I don't, Carmichael numbers. The basis case, it's telling you that of N is between 2 and 65,000. It looks like the case of 1 doesn't appear, because it tells you that N is going to be greater than between 3 and 265.
Would the algorithm work? Was it you'll eventually whittle n down to 1?
Well, once n is down to 1, then I believe the answer is. I mean, again, exactly what the algorithm is from last day, and it's not in my head anymore. Okay? But I we'll have to figure out. So, I don't know, but I don't think it's hard, is my short answer. Any other questions about these? I know people are a little discouraged. Okay? Let's go to another, again, I'm
Sorry, these are, you know, these have been discouraging. I understand this and will keep this in mind in how I view the world. The bumps for this week are going to be on backtracking. And I'm hoping people we can look at these problems. Hopefully people will be able to make some progress on them. I'd like to think that the same basic routine, which we'll talk about, will probably somehow, I mean, it's not, I don't want to get you too excited. These three problems are all relatively similar in nature. Okay, and so maybe that once you've got one, you can get them all relatively quickly. Okay, so what are the problems? Let's just go through them. This is the thing on backtracking. How many people have ever written a program for backtracking? You have eight queens. Does eight queens sound like a familiar thing? Yeah, you did. Most of you. We just talked about it in like 2:14. Okay, the eight queens problem or something like that. Okay, we'll talk about how to do backtracking. But let's talk about what the problems are. These are problems that are somehow related to exhaustive search. Okay? The first problem is a chessboard problem. I give you an N by N chessboard. I give you K bishops. What is a bishop on a chessboard? Not everybody may play chess. Here is a 4x4 chessboard. A bishop is a piece that when it's on a square can move diagonally. Okay, any square diagonally. And our goal is to put down as many mutually non-attacking bishops as possible. So on a 4x4 chessboard, how many bishops can I put down? Try this now, just as a little game. What's the maximum number of bishops you can think you can put down? Four. Where are the four?
Like, okay, one where you have that first one.
Okay. One.
Yeah.
That will certainly work. Is that all? Are they, could you put in more bishops?
You can put one on the other end.
I think that also would, right? Is that the maximum number of bishops? Well, these will certainly together clean out the corners. They will clean out this row here.
They'll clean out, yeah.
Yeah, looks like we need everything else. So in fact, six bishops can be put down on that square. And I think that's optimal. Okay? Does everybody get the problem? Okay? So the problem is, again, basically, given, you know, N and K, try to count the number of different ways you can do it. Okay? Any questions? Now, the only advice that I will give you here is that this problem has been, that these numbers get pretty big. Take a look at the output. Okay? So you may have to be a little bit, it says that the number of queens will be less than 10 to the 15th, but you might have to be a little bit clever about how you count them. Okay? It may not be that the right way to do it is to count, construct all of them and count them one by one. You may have to be a little bit clever about how you do that. Okay? Any questions? Okay? The second problem has to do with the 15 puzzle. Has everybody seen the 15 puzzle before? Look at this. Did you ever see the book and recognize this thing? Anybody who does not recognize it? Yeah. Has anybody ever solved this? Really?
Oh, not even programmatically.
No, I frankly got these things and never knew what to do with them. So I never figured out. Yeah, I went to the parties, I got the puzzle, I never figured out how to do it. But that was a separate question.
JavaScript program where you can put your own pictures in it, your own.
Yeah, that's a standard game. So your problem is to solve the 15 puzzle. And specifically you're asked to...
Okay. I don't know how hard this problem is.
Which one? This? Well, let's stop and think about it. Let's think about how hard it is before we try to solve it. Okay, it's not completely... So basically, I'm giving you an array of tiles in a particular configuration. That's really what this... If you look at the sample input here, there are one... It just says that there's two games. One, two, three, four games. And it's going to be asking you to solve this puzzle, if it is possible to solve it. Okay, so does everybody see the input? Is basically telling you where the 4x4 grid of pixels are. Okay, and it's asking you to find a short sequence of moves that solves the puzzle if it is solvable within 50 moves. Okay, and if it's not solvable within 50 moves, they want you to stop. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Any ideas how you might solve such a problem? Okay, right now you may not. Okay? Yeah?
I mean, you can use basically a brute force recursive, you know, algorithm where you basically go, okay, I'm going to run through a possibility down the tree, you know, the moving pieces, and each time checking whether I've solved a puzzle or reached.
Right.
And if I haven't, then I'm going to backtrack up the level and try, you know, alternate. So I go down the whole tree, find the shortest path.
Okay. So that's sort of the idea here that I think you want to work on. What is the shortest set of moves to solve this puzzle? Okay? And I claim that we can do something like that by a tree search, okay, or a backtracking tree search in particular. Okay? And we may have to be clever to get this thing done quickly enough. Okay? But I believe that it can be done by search. It may be done by you know how to solve it. You said you figured out how to solve it when you were four at the birthday party. So it may be that you can use what algorithm you use there. Okay? Or, but I would be trying because I didn't go to your, I was not successful at that birthday party. My inclination would be to try a backtracking search. I hope it will complete in the right time. Okay, that's right now the concern that I have a little bit, especially after what happened to you guys the last week. Level 3 problem, but let's see what happens. The next problem, let's go to the last problem because it's sort of similar flavor. And in fact may also be, you know, you'll see it's actually a similar flavor once we get the representation right. It talks about another puzzle. Is something by this company called Binary Arts, which makes great puzzles. Okay, this is a puzzle where, if we look at the picture, it consists of tiles, two circular tracks of tiles, which share three tiles between them. Does everybody sort of see what it's doing? So each tile has a number, depending on what its color or type is. The colors are either triangle-shaped triangles. Tiles or separators. And if you look at each track, it interleaves triangle separator. Does everybody see that? So what are you allowed to do? You're allowed to push one of the wheels around so that a triangle and a separator either rotate the left wheel left or right, or the right wheel left or right. Okay? And your goal is to produce this final, so let me take a look at what we're doing here. The final configuration of the puzzle, the goal configuration, is over to the left. The one on the right is what happens when you rotate the left wheel one step clockwise. Do we agree with that? That the one and the two go away. The 1, 5 come down. Does everybody see why that is rotating the left wheel one step clockwise? Two tiles go down, and with the base of the 0 and the 1 disappear from that center region. Okay? And then there's a 1, 5, 0, 1 come in. Does everybody sort of see that? So the question here is, you want to read as input a puzzle configuration which is describing the positions of the tiles, and they give an encoding scheme for that. Okay? And your job is to decide whether or not the, basically find the smallest number of moves it takes to solve this problem. Any questions here? Okay? Now, fundamentally, this is the same kind of a problem as the previous one, right? They're both puzzles. You both want to find the shortest number of moves. Basically, what you've got is a tree where the vertices of your tree is a puzzle state. And then your children are going to be the possible next states you can get to. Does everybody agree that that's conceptually what you want to do? You start out from the starting state of the puzzle. You can apply a sequence of moves, and that will generate other states. Coming up with a sequence of other moves will generate other states. Okay? And that's the basic approach. Okay? Any questions about that? Now the problem is, so what would the shortest path be? If we generate this tree and make all possible moves, the first node we get, if we do it in a breadth-first way, the first solution node we get, the number of paths on that traversal was the shortest path that it took. Right? Any questions? Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about backtracking. But all three of these are what I will call obvious backtracking problems. Okay. Obviously, they look like backtracking problems. Any questions? The last one is, since everybody should have gotten the Wolfram's talk, a cellular automata problem. Okay? So what is a cellular automata? A cellular automata is a cellular automata is a rule it's a rule that tells you basically how to transform a cell based on its neighbors. So it's a mapping from all eight possible combinations of pixels to what the central pixel should go to. Okay? So cellular automata is a rule that goes like, let's say like a typical rule. Now let's write a special one. Here's the eight possible patterns. Suppose we consider the special rule that for all of these things turns the middle cell to zero. Okay? What would this rule do when applied to a particular set of patterns? Let's say we give it a circular pattern. It wraps around here. The middle of this cell, this is the 1-1-1 rule. That will get turned into a 0 then, right? This is the 1-1-1-0-0-1 rule. This gets turned to a 0. What this rule is telling us is to wipe out everything and turn it to zero, right? That's what this rule is, the white out rule. Any questions?
Like 0, 1, 1 would be 0 underneath the third one.
So 0, 0, 1, 1 here, each rule is applied when it transforms the middle cell here according to the rule.
Oh, okay.
Let's try a more interesting rule. Let's try the rule of 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1. Is that right? Is that an interesting rule? Now let's look at this one. And now I give you, just to make it short, 0, 1, 1, 0 here. And this wraps around. So what does 0, 1, 1 turn into? 1. 0, 1, 1 turns into a 1.
110 turns into a 0. 100 turns into a 0. What's this one? 000 turns into a 0. And now we have this. Okay, what this is really going to do is just try in this particular input, go through the process of cycling through and wrapping ones around. So if you watch the picture evolve, you'll be seeing the ones walking across the automata. That's what this would do. Does everybody agree with that? Starting from this state, we generate the walk-around states. Okay? Everybody see that? See kind of nice cellular automata moving or something like that. That's what Wolfram was busy doing, right? He sort of kicked off lots of cellular automata moving. Okay? So what does he want to know? Again, people that will view these things as models of the universe. Okay? Now the question is, if you see a cellular automata state, let's say like this one, we started from here. Okay? Is there any state that would have produced this? Given the rules, is there any way we could have gotten to this if we didn't start from it? Okay? So let's put it this way. If I gave you the rules, let's say I gave you, is there any way we could have gotten to, let's say I gave you the rules, okay, I'm going to think of it a different way. This state, is there something that we could have come from to get to this state? The answer is yes. Right? Why? Because this one, if we wrapped it around, would have eventually gotten to it. In general, we can ask the question, given a table here telling me how the rule goes, and given a state, does there exist a state before it that the rule would apply to this? Okay? We call a state where there is no predecessor state a Garden of Eden. Why? What was the Garden of Eden? You know, somehow that was created, you know. God came along as a wolf. He was the Garden of Eden. What was the state before that? Well, there was no state. Okay? So a Garden of Eden is a state that they talk about here, which could not be reached from any other cellular automata state. Okay? And in general, you're given a cellular automata described as a number. Remember, when Wolf was talking, he got very excited about rule 110 or rule 30. So he's going to say, for rules are given by numbers, given the encoding scheme here. He gives you a state, and he asks, is there a way to get backwards to this state? Okay? And that's the question here. Okay?
So if it's the Garden of Eden, you start from beginning and keep going. If it's not a garden, if it's not a Garden of Eden, like this, it's circular, so to speak.
Well, no, it means that there is no way, suppose let's say I'm observing the universe at some time. There's this world moving on, pop, 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 pop. If I see this cellular, the world is currently in this state. I don't know that the world was just created, right? Might have just been created and walked into it.
Right.
Okay? But it's possible it was not just created because there was a state before that it couldn't come from. On the other hand, if it was a Garden of Eden, it couldn't have come from anything before that. So it means that that's the state that I'm observing, I am watching the beginning of the world.
Okay. Right. Like if all your rules are all zeros, everything goes to a zero. And a Garden of Eden state would be anything that has a one in it.
Exactly right. So that's a good point. Suppose we use the initial rules here. If I gave you a state that had a one in it, how could you have gotten the one and couldn't have been produced by any of these rules? So this is a Garden of Eden. Okay? Any questions? So people care about the outside of time, they care about these things. And people who work in this program probably care about these things. Any questions? Okay? So this is a cute thing. It's a somewhat different flavor than the others, but there's still a potential exhaustive search type of thing.
to it. So I've got to somehow think about all possible states and let it go through. Any questions? Okay, so these may look frightening. But let's talk about how backtracking works. Okay, what backtracking is and how you do it. And I'll even show you a program that basically implements backtracking. It's in the book, but I mean, to show you that it's not necessarily as frightening as you might think. Okay? So what is backtracking? Backtracking is a technique for systematically moving through all configurations of a search space. Okay? And the way that we're going to do this, the way I think of backtracking, is I'm going to model a solution as a vector. A vector is an array where A sub I is the ith element of my solution. And it's selected from a set of solution candidates, S sub I. So let's think about the, what do you call it? A solution for the 16 puzzle, or 15 puzzle. What is the solution to the 15 puzzle look like? Okay.
The final solution?
Well, yeah, what?
It's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
Okay, but that's a little bit different. That's the final state. That is not the solution. If that was the solution, you're done. You know what the answer is, right? So by solution, what I mean is, what's it asking for in the problem? What is it you want your program to find? It looks to me that what it wants you to find is the sequence of moves to take you to the goal state. Does everybody agree with that? So what is the solution? I will claim the solution is an array of an array of elements where each one is either left, right, up, and down. Okay? Does everybody agree with that? Okay? Now, let's think about this. First of all, how long can the solution be? The problem we have here? No, I only touched it as 15. The length of the solution. What's the maximum length solution might take care of? 15. So how many possible solutions are there for this puzzle? 2 to the 50? I have 2 to 50. Why 2? Okay, how many were there here?
Does it depend on what you start with?
Okay, let's start with the worst possible. We agree it depends on where you start from, right? It might be only one move away, right? So it's the actual solution distance, D, which is less than 50. D is less than or equal to 50, right? But what's it as a function of D? How many solutions do you sort of have to check like this?
It's something less than D to the good or 4 to the D.
You want to claim it's less than or equal to 4 to the D. Why is that?
Because there's 4 possible moves in theory from each position.
Right.
Although there's some pretty obvious pruning.
Okay. So clearly 4 to the D is an upper bound, right? Is every string, is every position of 4 possible letter choices?
But,
okay?
Yeah, I got it.
Now, do we know how many possible minimal solutions can there be? Okay. Let's now try to prune this a little bit. See that we really don't have to look at all 4 to the D solutions. Can someone give me an argument that there's not more, that there's less than or equal to 3 to the D interesting strings?
Sure, here. In that one, for instance, you can immediately discard it because at the third stage you're saying, okay, left, right. Hey, I just undid what I did on the previous step. This is obviously not going to get me any closer to the solution.
Everybody agree with that? That if we're looking for the shortest possible solution, we would never want to go directly back after where we came, right? Everybody agree with that?
What other such strings might not be legal here that we might want to prune out?
What if we're on one of the sides?
If I'm on one of the sides, if I'm in a corner, there are only two possible goals, right?
And you can prune one of those out.
And one of them I actually already came from, right? If I was on a side, there's only three possible moves, right? One of which I already came from, right? So constructing all of them and then testing them at the end is a bad idea, right? On the other hand, constructing them in pieces and saying, is there a possible solution to build from this, might enable me to find it without undue effort. Okay? Any questions about this?
We could make a further optimization by to know where the blank has to end up, for instance.
Yeah.
Can I draw it?
Yeah,
so
really
you
don't
need to explain.
So what I would do is I'd have an array like this. This is my 4x4 array. I know the blank has to end up here. And so what I do is I create the array 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then if the blank ends up in one of these squares, then I have less moves available to me, you know, because I've already found a solution. That's, you know, if my blank ends up here and I'm at move 10, and I've already found a move in 11, I know that I can't get the blank down to here unless it's 4 moves.
Okay, so we agree that there might be other criteria to prune. Okay? And so the act of doing a clever search is finding a way to prune it. Okay? To make it efficient. Okay? Any questions here? But let's not get too clever yet. Let's try to keep it simple. Okay, let me show you the basic strategy here. Okay? The basic strategy is that we're going to build up a solution of possibilities. And what are we going to say? Basically, at each step in the operation, we're going to have a partial solution. We're going to ask ourselves, can we make this partial solution longer by adding one move to it? If it is, we'll have to try to see what possible candidates are there for the next position. If we can do that, that's good. If not, that's bad. Okay? Then we will backtrack. Okay? So what I'm sort of proposing is that we try a strategy where we basically extend it and see what the possibilities are. Okay? After we extend it, either we're going to we'll see if we have a partial solution that is legal. If so, we will consider extending it again. We'll see if we have a complete solution. If so, we should report it and say we're finished. Okay? And if not, if we have no possibilities to extend it, we recur and delete the last element from the position. Any questions? Okay, this may sound complicated. Let me show you the algorithm. I'm going to show you something even better. I'm going to show you a program for doing backtracking. That is it. Okay? So this should not look intimidating now. Okay? It's almost it. But I'll show you some other applications of how you do it. So what's the story here? Basically, I want to have a backtracking program. It's a recursive program. Backtrack, backtrack. A is my partial solution. K is the position where I'm now going to put my next candidate. Input is some other stuff I may want to pass this procedure to help me prune in some way. Okay? That's not really important. So what is my prescriptor going to do? I take a look at my current solution, my current vector, and my know how many elements in it are meaningful, and whatever other information that might be problem important. And I ask myself, do I have a complete solution?
do I have a solution to the four Queens problem, or to the Queens problem, let's say, or in this case to the 16 puzzle? How would I tell whether I have a solution to the 16 puzzle, by the way? Under what condition would I have a solution here?
It matches up with, you know, something pre-described.
Yeah, in this case, if the tiles are in the positions 1, 2, 3, 4, such and such, right? Process the solution. What is my solution? How do I process my solution? Maybe print it out. Okay, that's what the problem asks me to do. Otherwise, I don't have a complete solution yet. What am I going to do? I'm going to bump up my K counter because I'm now going to add and not make my solution longer, my partial solution longer. What am I going to do? I first construct an array of all possible candidates for the next position in my solution. Okay? For, if I was doing the dumb backtracking here, my set of candidates would be left, right, up. Okay? Or maybe the set of moves that are legal from that spot in the square, right? I'm at a current location in the square. This is going to tell me, given that I am now on a quarter square, what are the moves that are legal? Construct all the possibilities. Then, for each candidate, copy that in the ith possibility into that position. And now test whether I'm done. Okay? Basically, go back and backtrack again. Either I will find a solution in the course of doing this, or I will not. If I do not find a solution in here, then I go back and try the next candidate in that spot. Next candidate. Okay? And this will give me the answer. Okay? Any questions about this procedure? Okay? This is the key backtrack procedure. Any questions? Okay? So, what would I do to, how might I do this, let's say? What I need to do to finish the job is to tell you exactly for a particular problem, I need to set is a solution, process solution, and construct candidates. Those are the three procedures that I haven't told you how to do yet. Right? Everybody agree with that? So, your job is basically, if you're doing an exhaustive search, usually your job is to do something like this, okay? And then do an exhaustive search from it. Any questions? So now we just need to fill in these three spots. Any questions? Yeah.
Absolutely. Question. Would it be also complicated if you like left, up, right, down, and then left hand and then make a circle?
I see. So what you're saying is the question of whether you prune a state, whether the state is no longer interested, is probably a function of okay. So what you might want to do to prove this properly is you might want to ask yourself, did I get to any state that I had previously explored? If so, that's a generalization of the left-right problem that he had. I shouldn't explore it anymore, right? So I might have to employ more sophisticated pruning criteria. Okay? But basically, if a move takes me back to the state that I've already been, I should prune it. There's no possible successor solution that's needed. I should arrange it so my construct candidates comes back with an empty set of candidates. Right? If I have a loop, there should be no candidates to go to that are worth pursuing. Okay? Does everybody agree with that? Any questions? Okay? So let's look at a couple of applications. Okay, again, as I told you before, the key to making this thing work is designing this, the three subroutines. Is it a solution? Construct the candidates and process the solutions. Okay? Any questions? So let's look at an example. Suppose, let's say, I want to construct all subsets. How many subsets of n things are there? Talked about this. What? 2 to the n. What if I want to use backtracking? My backtrack procedure here to construct all subsets of n things. What is this doing? Well, I am going to, as my state space, have the ith element of my subset be either true or false, to denote whether the ith element is in my subset. Right? So how am I going to represent the subset?
Let's say I want to represent, I have a subset of 5 elements. How do I represent the subset 1, 4? Well, for 1 it's true, 2 it's false, 3 it's false, 4 it's true, 5 it's true. It's false. Right? Everybody agree that this true-false representation would represent the subset. So what am I now going to do? When is my vector a subset of n things? Well, it's when I've got n elements in there, right? So let's say I want to find all subsets of size 5. When my partial solution is of length 5, I am done. That seem reasonable? Let's look at that. What are the candidates for the ith position? Well, in this case, it's just true or false, right? Everybody agree that the candidates for my ith position in my matrix are either true or false, right? So what does this thing do? It stores in an array, true and false, and tells me there's two candidates. Okay? How do I print out my solution? Well, what here, I got a little fancy, okay? Print the left bracket, for I go from 1 to k. If a sub I is true, print on that number, and then print the bracket. So what is this program going to do? It is going to construct all subsets and print them out, okay? And not in the true-false representation, but in the, you know, representation like that. Any questions? Does everybody see how this works? I don't know if people find this amazing or not. Okay. Here is the main subroutine call. Backtrack. Give me all to generate subsets once I have all these procedures in. Call backtrack. Fill up the array A. So far I have 0 elements in it, right? And give me all subsets of size n. Okay? Remember that there was another field. Let's look back at the backtrack procedure again. What did this thing do? It said, is there a solution, a, k, and input? I know I have a solution when I have n elements in there. So n was passed as my input here, right? To tell me where to stop. What are my candidates? Construct the candidates. Well, I didn't care about the input here because the candidates in my position are only true and false. Okay? And then my process the solution here, I got fancy. I just spent more time printing it out than anything else. Any questions about how this works? Is this sort of easy, clear, or not clear?
The interesting thing about the backtrack procedure is to try to figure out how it works from the recursive calls. What's this going to do when I try to construct all subsets of size 3? What is going to happen? Well, what's this big program going to do? It's going to start out, I called it, I left the array A. I call it with k equals 0.
what are the possible candidates for the zeroth position? True and false. Right? That's what it does here. What's it now going to do? It's now going to take the first one of those, right through. Okay, it's now equal to 1, right? Am I done? Now do I have a solution? Now I'm going to call backtrack again, right? Backtrack is now going to ask, is this a solution? Is k equal to 3 yet, right? So it's not a solution. What's it going to do? It's going to now say, what are the candidates for the second spot? It's going to copy that in now, right? And now recur. Now k was equal to 2. And now recur. Am I done yet? No. What's it now going to do? It says k equal to 3. True, false. Now what's it do? It calls backtrack again. What does backtrack do now? Says it's a solution, so it prints it out. What is the solution that it would print? 1, 2, 3, right? What's the next thing that's going to happen? Now it backtracks, right? Backtracks means K is now, it's going back basically down. Okay. Well, no, now it's still, I think you have to make sure it hasn't actually incremented K yet. So K stayed the same. But we're back in this loop now, right? Because we got out of this. I'm not finished because I didn't set any finished flag. Now I'm going to go and try the second possibility here. And now I'm going to go recur again. And now I'm going to go try it again. And what's this going to happen? Now I have another solution, right? And what's that solution going to be? 1, 2. Right? True, false.
I think it's false, indicating that it's not in the subset that we were trying to find.
Right, so that's why 1, 2. That's why 1, 2, but a subset is a complete string. It's a completely specified string of n things.
I see, I thought you were trying to find subsets of a certain length.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
A subset of size 3, yeah, size 3. So it gets printed when it passes the is a solution test. The solution is when k is large enough that it gets to 3. Okay? What's going to happen now? We tried both candidates when we backtrack. Are there any more candidates? No, so the loop's going to end and we're going to bond out of backtrack. That's going to get us back to this recursive call. And now we are here. And it's going to ask for the next candidate. Right? That's going to announce that this thing equal to false. Is this now a solution? Not yet. But when we go in advance, now we're going to put in the possibility true. Okay? Then, so that's not going to give us what? That's going to give us 1, 3. It's then going to later give us that false, which is 1. Right? Then it's going to backtrack from here. There's no more candidates, so it backtracks from here, right? We're now down to this situation. This is going to get sent to an S, and now we keep recurring, right? D, F, C, D, F, C. What's the next set printed? 2, 3. What's the next one? What is the next one? This is now done, right? So what's the choice? It becomes an F. So what are the possibilities now? C, F. What is it to get printed as candidates? We have a T here, we've got what? And if we have an F here, what do we get? What? Empty set. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Everybody see that?
See, something interesting to note is that if you take each of those states, you know, those N states, and instead of T's and F's, you have zeros and ones, you're getting exactly that list over there in order.
Yes, okay, so one thing to do here is if you want to generate all bit patterns, you're right, so this bit, you know, you might even use this bit just to generate all Sailor Automata strings, let's say. Okay, everybody agree with that?
Yes, yeah, so for the programs that you want, then the answer has to be one of those sets.
Okay. Well, like what you're doing, is printing out all the subsets. It depends what you want to do. For this particular problem, all I asked was for you to print out all the subsets. What if you wanted to count how many subsets there were? What would we have to change to count the number of subsets instead of print them? Yeah, I go start, you know, count equals count plus one. That would be the entire thing here. Or what if we wanted to print out just the number of elements in the subset? Well, we can do that. Or what if we want to see, let's say we give points to different subsets. You may have a favorite subset you want. Maybe a subset is a solution to a problem. You can now check for the smallest subset. Let's say you want to find what the smallest subset is. You can count how many elements are there in the subset. If it's less than your smaller one, keep track of it. This is where we do the work to analyze the possible solutions once we have them. We might print them, we might do something with them. Okay? Any questions? So your knob to play with these things is to change these subroutines. Okay? Any questions? And all you, once you understand how the backtrack procedure is, this can be surprisingly simple. Okay? Any questions? Let's look at another example. Suppose you want to construct all permutations of n things. Constructing subsets is somehow easy. How do you construct all possible permutations of something? Suppose you want to construct all possible arrangements of n factorial things. What is the problem? Or how do you do it? Okay? I want to argue that we can do this using backtracking. Our partial solution is going to be what? It is going to be... What is our partial solution going to be? We want to construct a permutation, or all permutations. Well, that's how many there are, but how do you know? Let's say you want to build them, you want to print them out, or a picture of all the permutations. Okay?
Yeah. Try, I guess, your first step is, you know, what are the possibilities for the first thing?
So you put the first thing, what are possibilities? You want to affect all permutations of size 3. Let's say n equals 3. What are the possibilities for the first permutation element of the permutation? Well, what should the now let's think about it. What should, if we want to represent a permutation, what should our vector contain? Whose will work for subsets? Suppose we're trying to build up a permutation.
Well, you need at least 3 distinct values.
So let's say you want the permutation numbers 1 through n. Right? What are the candidates for the first spot? 1, 2, and 3. What are the candidates for the second spot?
2 possibilities, whatever you include the first one.
Everybody agree with that? So somehow, once I put 1 in here, what are the candidates for the second possible position? You see what my routine is doing?
First of all, notice that backtracking is doing something that, you know, is kind of smart. it constructs the list of candidates for that position at the time based on what the current partial solution is. Right? Everybody see that? Okay, the other, the subset's candidate construction was trivial. It was always true or false. Here it's a little bit more complicated. So what is this? Basically, this is saying, again, what am I doing? I'm now given a partial solution, constructing a list of all integers that are not yet in my solution. How did I do this one? Well, I set a flag. I have a local array from 1 to n. I say, is it in the permutation? The answer is no, originally. Then for each partial element in my partial solution, I set that flag to be true, the ice flag to be true, if I is in there. Right? Is that sort of what I'm doing here? For all my, A is my partial solution. A1 is the first element, A2 is the second element. For I goes from 1 to k.
Okay, or 0 to k.
For every element, set A sub I equal to true, or the perm is a big vector telling me which, inferm is a big vector telling me which elements are in my solution so far, right? So basically, if A sub I is, the value of A sub I, perm, inferm of A sub I should be set to be true because we know that the value of A sub I is in the ice spot of my permutation already. Then what am I going to do? For every element that is not in my permutation, add that to my list of candidates. That's what this is doing, right? So everybody believe that all this program is doing is giving me a list of the position guys that are not yet in the permutation. Is that clear or not clear?
Unhappy people in the book, this one person speaking very soundly. Okay? But that's okay.
Okay? Any questions?
Okay, it's late.
Okay, any other questions? Okay? So, that's how we construct the candidates, right? The candidates are all the elements that are not yet in the permutation. Okay? How do I process my solution? Well, first of all, how do I tell whether something is a solution? I will claim it is a solution under what condition? When do I have a permutation of size n? When I have filled in all n slots, just like before. How do I print my permutation? Well, in this case, I'll just print the values of my vector, right? Or I go from 1 to n. Print out what a sub I is. And how do I generate the permutations? Well, I just call backtrack again, as before. Any questions?
Yeah. This is trivial. For the construct candidate, your two loops, you have one starting from I equals 1, and another one starting from I equals to 0.
Yeah.
Why are you, the first one, you're starting from 1, the other one, you're starting from 0?
Okay, the reason is, okay, of course you got me scared, but the reason is the following. My array in C starts from the 0th element, right? My permutation is of the numbers 1 through n. So what am I doing here? 1 to n, okay, is the, I'm basically wanting to know, is the value I in the permutation yet? That's what this is telling me, right? Is I in the permutation yet? Additionally, it is false. Then for every spot in the permutations, okay, 0 less than the index, I check whether the value, I say what is in the ice position. This is a number from 1 to n. This is a number from 0 to k. Okay, does everybody agree with that? It might be I should have had a greater than, less than or equal to here, but then that we're not going to, that actually, except that's actually not quite true because c's value starts from n. I'm sort of not using the 0th value. So this is a slightly clunky thing. But by setting n dots large enough, the problem would have gone away.
What's K again? I'm sorry.
K is the size, how many elements are so far in my solution?
Okay.
Right? So if K was zero, it meant that I didn't have anybody in the solution, and so we didn't actually iterate the loop at all. Okay? Then what are the candidates for the ith spot? Well, I'm going to try every number from 1 to n. If it's not in the permutation, then it's a candidate for the ith spot.
Okay.
Any questions?
Just
okay, that's good to see. Okay. Any questions? Okay. So this I claim is not so, you know, once you understand it, and once you have the basic procedure here, okay, and you play around with it, I encourage you, by the way, to work through the examples of subsets and permutation before you do anything too serious with this routine, right? You can see it's very short and simple, but make sure you understand why it works. If not, it's hopeless. And I think experimenting is probably the best way to figure that out. Any questions? But we can also do more powerful things with it. Let me show you one last example, which I'll talk more. Let me just talk about this. Quickly, since we'll probably have other examples to talk about for next class. Let's look at the 8 queens problem. What was the 8 queens problem? The 8 queens problem asks, given a, sort of like the bishop's problem, it said given a n by n chessboard, let's say an 8, we're here, let's say n is 4. How many queens can we put down that don't attack each other? Where a queen can move like a bishop, but also like a rook. Right? Does everybody know what a queen does in chess?
Anything at once.
What?
Anything at once.
Almost anything. It doesn't behave like a knight. It doesn't do anything, but somebody doesn't want to behave like a knight. I just think that's true. Okay? Any questions? So how many queens? Can someone show me how to put down 4 non-attacking queens? In a 4x4 board? Down the middle of the board, that would work. Okay? Does everybody agree with that? So, okay. So, the question here is, can we construct all possible solutions? How many count, how many 8 queen solutions there are for a particular n by n, for an n by n chessboard as n goes, for a given value of n? We're running a little low on time. Let me first just inspire you with how little program is actually necessary once you know what you're doing. Okay? This is all the extra code I have to add to backtrack to do it. Okay? How did I do it? Well, what I'm going to do is, again, I'll tell you, you know, sometimes it's interesting to try to figure out how you get there. How might I represent an 8-queen solution? I want to claim I need a way to represent it as a vector, right? What would be a reasonable way to represent a solution to the 8 queens problem? Tell me the positions of the queens, right? Where should I describe the first queen? How many possibilities are there places for the first queen?
What are any places for the board?
Okay. That's right.
But I'll claim maybe that's a deal that that would clearly work. It's going to sit someplace on the board. But I think that there is a more clever argument that says we don't have to consider all possible choices for our first queen, all possible squares for the first queen. How many queens will there be in the first row?
One.
One. Why can't there be two?
No, there was still one another.
Why can't there be zero?
Because you only have eight rows and you have eight queens.
Exactly right. Everybody agree with that? So this is a little bit different than the bishop's problem somehow, but I've got a very strong constraint. I can have my queen for row, it will be my row 1 queen, row 2 queen, row 3 queen. How many choices do I have for my row 1 queen? 8. Okay. And how many choices do I have for my second queen?
7.
Okay.
Wow.
Why is this? Let's think about that. Well, because what you want to say is, once I've decided to put my first queen in this corner row, let's say that now I'm doing it this way, put my first queen here. What possible choices do I have for my second queen? So what are the possibilities? We can explain it maybe this one and this one, right?
Oh, yeah.
How would we compute those possibilities?
I just iterate through the rows and see if you have a conflict with anything.
Above it. So let's look how I did this. Okay, I have this big program to do it. Okay, what am I saying? Okay, I have a Boolean array, might the move be legal? I'm going to say that I'm going to consider all possible columns, write a figure for a particular row. For all possible columns, initially I'll say column I is legal. Okay? For each possible queen, each queen I have so far in my solution, each previous queen in my solution, will it hit that square? And I want to argue, if you do your GI, I don't want to defend this right now, but I'll claim that given a queen, when I know the position that I got, my first row queen is here, does it attack this square? I can compute it. I know where it's going to attack this row. Right? For any queen, there is exactly two spots, I guess, where it can conceivably hit that row. Okay? And so somehow, what am I doing? Basically, my absolute values are going to cover, I guess, two cases. That's why I'm doing this thing. This tells me, does that queen hit that row? If it does, I guess these are the two cases, maybe. Okay?
Well, the absolute value will hit the diagonals.
All right, these are diagonals. This must be for the rook.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, they're in the same column.
Okay. Under either situation, the legal move is false. I looked through this 8 times because I wanted to use a do loop for loop. Maybe I'm sloppy. Okay. Maybe I should have ended it as soon as I started. It's false. But
you're not actually, because in there, you're not actually computing whether you can put something there. Aren't you just creating the row?
Well, no. Here, what I'm deciding is it possible that row I is going to be legal? That column I is going to be legal on this row?
Right.
And so, what I'm going to do is check it out. Any queen that's currently there that hits this row invalidates me.
Right.
So, the moment I have one false, then I know that the move is not going to be legal. Yes. That's why in this loop I try every queen. It was legal until you could find a queen that threatens that square.
Oh, I see. That's where you're computing the move. Okay.
Right.
I'm doing something slightly different.
If the move is legal after all these tests, add it to my list of possibilities. Okay. That's all that I'm doing, right?
Sure.
You can probably do this in a couple of different ways, but this is how I did it. Okay? And then now what do we want to do? We only want to count how many solutions there are, so I added one to a global variable every time I find one.
And is it a solution? Well, if I put that in Queens, it is a solution. Okay? So this is the entire program.
You know, that's basically, I think I may have to, is that true? Actually, I have to call, excuse me. I also need to define the main program to call it. Solution count is zero. Backtrack, and then print the number of solutions. Okay?
So that's what this thing did. Any questions? So when I ran it, you know, I was able to find all the solutions for up to 14 queens. Okay? Any questions? So think about these.
Again, how would I recommend that you proceed? Let's look at the problems and make a guess as to which is easiest. If I had to take a guess which one's easiest, okay, the first one is basically doable by backtracking, but you might need to use a little bit of an observation on how you count it to avoid counting, you know, to try to avoid construct. You don't have to construct all possible configurations, I will claim. Okay, and that might be too slow.
You have to be a little bit more clever. Okay, but I think that's a straightforward backtracking. You know, and if you understand the eight queens, in principle, you should be able to do something to put down bishops. Okay, relatively easily. So this one looks promising. Whether you can get it to work for large enough values of n in the stupidest way is not clear. Okay? But I'll claim it can be done. With a little bit more cleverness we may figure out. This might be the first thing to think about, just because it's the most like the one I just showed you. The color ash one is clearly a backtracking problem. Because on these things, the only thing that's a little bit tricky is that we are asked to find the shortest possible path. And that might make it more like a breadth-first search rather than a depth-first search, depending on how you think about it. Okay? So I'd probably start with this one. At least get to the point where you can do it and see if you can get it to go for a large enough n. And then maybe we'll try to figure out if there's another trick that's needed. Okay? Which of these are easier? My guess is this is probably more obvious that it could be done by brute force search. The state space here is smaller than here. So this might require less cleverness, although you have to be careful. It may require more diddling with your representation. Okay? Think about it and see what happens. But I think the first one's probably the easiest. Okay? Any questions? Okay. Good luck. Have a good break.
This gives you something to keep yourself amused. And do the best you can. I realize we are actually moving reasonably rapidly in here. And if there's sentiment to slow down, we can discuss this after. I don't even think there's great sentiment to slow down.
How many people are basically happy with this pace? I know you're not getting in that even, but at least happy that we're doing new things each week. Okay? If you have any feedback for me, of course, you know there's a survey form now on the web. Haven't you heard about this from your classes?
Yes.
So go and give me your feedback and let me know too fast, too slow. I'll decide from that. Thank you. See you then.
Do you have...
Okay. Excuse me. How many of these have you done over the...
No, I'm just kidding. You sit back quietly during this semester. Have you been... It's you here every day, so I assume you're doing... But you're very quiet. How many of them have you done so far, you think? Or?
Gotten in the past? I think about seven.
Okay. So you're all working at this thing and doing... Okay, just checking. Okay, because you're the one that seems to be the quietest of the bunch. Okay, you listen... You're entitled to listen. Okay, fair enough. Okay, just checking. We'll see. Okay, you have a good break, too. What is this thing now? Uh-oh, trouble.